Welcome back everyone to the weekly episode of Electret Podcast. I'm Fred, your host as usual, and I'm joined with Seth Weintraub.
How's it going, Fred? Seth. I'm doing well.
Yeah, thank you. Another big week for Tesla news and EV news. Probably the most important for most of our listeners is going to be that Tesla finally opened up Model 3 orders for non-Tesla owners, non-Model S and X owners.
Finally.
Yeah, that's what something that a lot of people were looking forward to. And last week, as we discussed, we had a good in that it was coming because current owners were able to place a new reservation and order right away. So that was a good indication that Tesla was running out a backlog of current owners that are ready to put to transfer the reservation into an order with the current configuration that are available, which is, as we know, is fairly limited right now. But finally, this week, Tesla started sending out invitations. Actually, it's not all invitations. So make sure to go to your Tesla account if you have a reservation and you're a non-owner in the U.S. because you could maybe just open the account and have access to the design studio. So that's something that Tesla started somehow phasing out the email invite. So even though you don't have an invite in your inbox right now,
or sometimes the emails go to spam or you know whatever.
Yeah,
they come
that
late.
Too.
And it's not just California. It's I think we got some emails from people in Missouri and all over.
Yeah, all over the place. That was surprising too. So they're not sticking to just the California like they did with the owners. But that makes sense too, because the main concern about that was to keep the fleet around close to the factory, and if there's an issue with it, they can fix it faster. But the fleet already spanned out all over the U.S. with just the owner's backlog of our reservation. And right now, it's open to non-owners. I think it's mainly still like first day. I think most people were, if not even just first day, like online. I think it was just like mainly
people who are online.
Waited in line in store. So that might be still a priority factor right now if you're waiting for your invitation to order.
Fred, when they open the all-wheel drive, do you think they'll start again around California, or do you think they'll just open it up to whoever, you know, obviously or hopefully, for my sake, they do current owners first, but do you think they'll do current owners in California or around the factory?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they're going to do still priority current owners. I don't know if it's going to be in the U.S., though, because the timing of the all-wheel drive entering production seems to match launching in Canada, too. So I don't know. Maybe they're going to expand it out. That's probably just all awful thinking on my part. But it still makes sense in terms of the delivery windows that Tesla already disclosed. But it would make sense based on the first rollout of the Model 3 configuration if you worry about potential issues and having to bring back the car to service or to the factory, then you want to keep it around California. So
right. I mean, I guess most of the car is the same. It's just the front drive unit and some other.
Yeah, and we've seen some teardown this week, and the wiring harness, the actual framing frame underneath the car underneath the front trunk is already all set up for a front drive unit. So it seems to be like a minimal difference in terms of the actual production of the car. It's just going to be, you have to do the smaller drive unit in front and just install it and make the connection with the battery pack.
So is there actually like a space that isn't being taken up in the rear wheel drive ones? So, you know, my question would be like, will the front trunk get smaller on the all-wheel drive version?
Yeah, well, that happened with the Model S, of course. Mm-hmm. The front drive unit reduced the frunk space. And the Model 3 frunk is already like pretty much the same size about of a Model S with front dual motors. It looks like there's some space, but it's fairly limited. So maybe we have never seen the front drive unit of a Model 3 so far, so we don't know just how big is it. Maybe they managed to make it like much smaller, because there's a big difference between the rear drive unit and the front drive unit in the Model S. Now we've seen the rear drive unit in the Model 3, which is already smaller than the ones in the Model S. So maybe it's going to be the same proportion for the Model 3 front drive unit. But I think they might have to still do some modification in terms of frunk space.
Well, I think it's a little smaller, probably just because of the horsepower requirement is less. Yes. But also, I think we did see a little bit of what the front drive unit will look like, because that one image came up on Tesla's page.
Yeah, you're right. We saw that. If you look, if you just tap dual motor Model 3 in an electric track, you'll see the picture. And it is significantly smaller. But we would just see like a 2D pictures from bottom up, so it's not ideal, but it does look smaller.
Yeah.
Speaking of the power of the Model 3, maybe we should mention we didn't write about that because we're really not sure of the accuracy of the system.
Yeah, the dyno.
Yeah, there's been a video of a new Model 3 owner that put the Model 3 on a dyno. And it came up with the peak power output of 393 horsepower, which is a lot more than has been disclosed in the past. And the main problem with that, first off, Tesla never like officially listed the power output of the motor, of the Model 3 motor. And that's just their new marketing philosophy with the Model 3. Model 3 being a more mass market vehicle, and they don't want to confuse people with the kilowatts, a kilowatt hour battery pack, the output with the motor in kilowatts instead of horsepower. So, and well, the transition is pretty easy, but they seem to be like very focused on not sharing anything like that, not focusing anything like that, because they don't want people also to compare it to the Model S. Since a Model 3 could have a much smaller battery pack and still achieve more range because it's more efficient. So they don't want people to be confused, like having a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack in the Model 3 ends up having a much greater range than a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack in the Model S. So I understand the confusion at this level, but I think they should still publish it somewhere, like on their website, and just not make it like like the big difference with the Model S is that the kilowatt hour capacity is in the actual badge, the name of the Model S. We call the Model S 75D and things like that. So maybe don't do that with Model 3, but still advertise it somewhere. But
I think we had a conspiracy theory on that you know, somewhere down the line maybe they could get some efficiencies of the car better, and maybe, you know, drop their 75 kilowatt battery down to 70 kilowatts, theoretically, and still sell the car as the same long range car because it still gets 310 miles. But that's not, you know, that's just a conspiracy theory.
Yeah. And coming back to the power instead of the energy capacity, so the actual official rating by Tesla is 271 HP. Excuse me. So over 100 HP below what came out on the dyno. And now that's another conspiracy theory, is that Tesla is lowballing the number and anything like that. I don't think that's the case, really. Those things are very hard to calibrate. I mean, the dyno, I mean...
Yeah, and those guys, like, no offense to those guys, but they didn't look like dyno experts or car experts. Well, I mean, something about a guy smoking a Virginia Slim 120 while working on the car didn't really inspire confidence.
And I checked with some sources, and they weren't impressed by the video at all. And they said that's not accurate, and to stick with the official 271 HP. So don't read too much into that video. That's gonna be my recommendation here.
Although, you know, Tesla does release software updates every once in a while that eke out a little bit more performance.
Yeah,
not 100, not over 100 horsepower, but
no, but not just, don't look at on the horsepower thing, look at the percentage wise. So you're telling me that you can increase by 50%, like 40% the power output. It's just not happening. A lot of people are tearing down the Model 3 right now. So we're gonna see. That wasn't a tear down, but they do like their independent testing of the vehicle. So that was an example of it. We're going to see a much more of that, I think, in the coming weeks.
Yeah, we saw Germany this week.
That was
likely BMW, right?
that was going to be my segue into the Germans are also reverse engineering the vehicle, tearing it down. So if you remember, a few weeks back, we reported on pictures that were sent out to us of two Model 3s on a hair freight going to Germany. We didn't have we didn't know exactly where they were going. Well, they were going to Leipzig, but that's just the hub there. We don't know the end customer that ordered the air freight and bought the Model 3s. But right now, but last weekend, actually, we got a report from Germany. I can't pronounce that publication's name, but you can check out the article on Electrek, and it's linked in the YouTube video right now below. A German publication reported that at least one of the Model 3s was purchased by a German premium automaker, as we suspected, and they used it for a few weeks with their managers and executive to just test the car and see how it handles and everything. And they came out very impressed of their test drive of the vehicle. And after that, they tore it down and tested all the subsystems separately. And then they were even more impressed with that, especially the power electronics, according to the report. And the report never actually mentioned who bought the vehicle, though it did mention that they paid 185,000 euros for it, which is absolutely insane. We've seen plenty of people trying to make a few bucks reselling their Model 3s on the aftermarket after having a priority delivery, but never anything close to 185,000 euros.
Somebody got lucky.
Come again?
Somebody got really lucky that they sold their $50,000 Model 3 for $180,000.
Yeah, that's $230,000 US, that is. So that's a pretty significant premium on a used car. We actually looked into it a little bit, and we got a few credible reports that the automaker is actually behind the value, which would make sense. The Model 3 has always been positioned as a 3 Series competitor, and 3 Series is a big moneymaker for BMW. So I think it might be as big, their biggest profit center, but probably the biggest vehicle program in terms of units.
Yeah, and one of our commenters who could be anybody and not true at all said that he had a friend who is at a BMW subsidiary. And he said that he was impressed by the technology, years ahead of what BMW had to offer, and go from there, I guess.
Yeah, that has been the case pretty much with every car that Tesla came out.
Well, it's just interesting because you always hear the shorts going, oh, you know, BMW and Jaguar are just going to build their, electric car, and it's going to be better than Tesla. And, Tesla owners and people in the know kind of know that it's a lot more than just a battery and a motor. There's quite a bit of stuff going on. And even, Tesla is beating every, performance-wise, Tesla is beating every, startup, every prototype coming out before they even come out. So I think those shorts who clearly don't know what they're talking about, I think they're in for a rude awakening if they think BMW is just going to turn on their electric car factory and it's going to take over.
I think a lot goes into just the backpack, like Tesla focus on the battery module, especially the battery module technology. And that's something that even JB Straubel confirmed, like that power electronics and battery module has been Tesla's big advantage over other automakers and over other companies, like you said, startups. Since the startup actually, we'll use the word inspired. They were inspired a lot by Tesla. Of course, Tesla famously made popular using cylindrical battery cells in many of them per modules, and then a few modules per battery pack, instead of the industry standard, which is prismatic cells, much bigger cells, a lot fewer cells per battery modules. So that's what most automakers are using, because it's technically easier to make a battery pack with fewer cells than it is with many, many, many cells. I mean, we're talking about thousands of cells per pack here. But startups actually followed Tesla on that route, and most companies, we're talking about Faraday Future and what are they called? The other startup, Chinese back in California.
I know, it's slipping my mind right now.
Lucid Motors.
Right.
Lucid Motors, they did the same thing too. So technically, they could be competitive with Tesla on that, in that level, but Tesla has so much experience doing that. They've been doing that since the Roadster. They haven't changed the general architecture. It has improved with each generation. Like, you have how many generation of Model S battery pack? Maybe like 4 or 5 at this point.
Right.
Then there were 3 or 4 for the Roadster, and now there's the Model 3. So that's like almost over a half a dozen generation of the battery pack. So it has improved a lot. But the core idea behind it, to use cylindrical cells and many of them per pack, that hasn't changed.
Yeah, you know, I almost wonder if it's like, you know, if we're talking about the whole industry and the whole, you know, ecosystem, I wonder if it's almost bad that Tesla is so far out in front of everybody else. Like, it's hard for a startup to get any kind of traction because, like, nobody's going to beat the new Roadster. Like, nobody's going to beat those specs. It's 600 miles and 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. Like,
though we've seen a video this week, though.
Right.
We haven't posted it in the podcast post. We weren't planning on to talk about it because it's a $4.4 million car, so it's right. Not like it's not gonna compete with the Roadster or anything. But they did. It's an all electric car, and they did beat the 0 to 60 apparently with a 1.9, which is the same as this. It was 1.9, but for 0 to 100 kilometers. So that's
62
miles per hour. And Tesla said 2.1, I think, for the 62 miles per hour.
And so but that's the slow quicker one. That's not the Founder Series. The Founder Series is going to be faster, supposedly.
Yeah, well, I wasn't like the way he said that wasn't clear. Like he said that's what all he said is that's what you're doing right now. That's what the prototype's doing. That now the production version could be better. And also our understanding is that the production version is going to be like the standard one, and the Founder Series could be a little bit better. But if you look at Tesla's other vehicles, the Founder Series were never different in terms of performance or anything. It was just like fewer cars, and they had the Founder Series badge on it.
Right.
And normally when I say fewer cars, it was like never more than 100 or so. Sometimes just 50s or so, 50 cars or so. Now it's going to be 1,000 cars. So maybe it's going to be different because of that. So there's less of a scarcity aspect to it, since there's going to be 1,000 of them.
Right.
So maybe they want to make it different with a higher spec or something. But somehow I doubt it. I think they're just going to want to do a production version with the highest possible specs.
Speaking of that, how are you doing on your Roadster percentage right now for referrals?
56%. How about you?
52. I got one more.
One new this week. Yeah, I got two this week. So shout out to the person that used my referral code. Excuse me. Yeah, like I said last week, if I do get the 100% and I will pick it up in California, drive it all the way back to Montreal, and stop every time I need to stop, like a supercharger or a hotel or something, and we'll do a meetup and let people that use the referral code drive it, and people can see it and everything.
And if you use my referral code, I'll let you use it at your wedding or or your kid's wedding. So, you know who's to use, right? Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Speaking another great segue. Speaking on the winning cars,
yeah.
You have a chance if you want to donate to a good cause. You can win the Model 3 number 6. Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, he organized a giveaway to raise funds, a raffle, if you will, to raise funds for his charity, his nonprofit company, which is installing learning gardens at schools to teach kids about what he calls real food. If you don't know Kimball started out with Elon, actually, his first company, Zip2, in the 90s. They co-founded that together. Then they sold that to Comcast. Elon went to start PayPal. Kimball went a completely different way. He stopped doing the entrepreneur thing for a while and went to cooking school, like a culinary school.
Yep.
And he became a restaurateur, someone who starts a restaurant. And he has a chain of restaurant right now in Colorado, in Tennessee, in Chicago, a few places. And alongside those restaurants, he started that charity side by side. And now he's also on Tesla's board too. So he's in.
Right. That's how he's got number six. I don't think Elon was getting out.
Yeah, it's not like Elon is just giving cars away to his brother or anything. He's involved with Tesla quite closely. And he got the number six, and now he's giving it away. So the way Omaze works, so he's giving it away to Omaze, so you can buy a certain amount of chances to win the drawing, which is going to happen in April, I think. So if you go to omaze.com/Tesla, I think. Tesla.
Just go to our article on it and click through that. That'd be much more effective. Article,
you're gonna find it. And $10 can buy you 100 entries. And so far, you can put $100 will buy you 1,000 or something like that. So we participated. I did. So maybe you're going to win it. I don't know. But either way, it's a good cause and it's going to help a kid. So that's nice. I'm pretty sure they're going to raise a ton of money with that. Like, it makes sense.
They should. And that's a good cause. So why not?
Yeah, because $10 for 100 entries, that's the minimum. So, I know that just on the website alone, I think like 3,000 people clicked on it, and over 1,000 registered. So I'm pretty sure they're gonna cover the cost at least on level 3. It's fully equipped with the autopilot, NS autopilot, and self-driving, I think, too. So he took everything on the car, and the car is blue.
Yeah.
Good-looking car. He didn't give the mileage, though. Don't know how many miles he put on.
It would have been cool if it was like a white interior one or something cool.
Yeah, difference. No. He was among the first to take delivery, so it was very limited in terms of options. I don't know where it is, too. Is it like in Colorado? I think probably. It's based in Colorado. So I don't know if you win, you have to pick it up or something, but...
It's worth it, I think.
Yeah. If you win it with $10 or something like that, you're going to show up anyway. So moving away from the Model 3 a bit, we have a few big news in terms of Model S and X. So we're going to start with that. What we learned a few weeks back, we didn't report on it, but Model X delivery time in the U.S. were pushed to June, which is
quite a bit of time.
Yeah, it's a lot longer than usual. Like at that time, it was pretty much like 5 months when they didn't make the change earlier this month. So now it's like 4 to 5 months.
Can get a Model 3 quicker than a Model X right now if you're already an owner.
If you're already an owner, yeah, technically. So that's really weird. And what happened this week is that they did the same for the Model S. So now both the Model S and X are due in June in the U.S., and there's still some deliveries in Europe and Asia because they're Tesla delivering batches. But even when you consider the batches, it's a long delivery time. So of course, plenty of speculation come up. Just a lot of different theories. The main one is of course Tesla is is holding out on U.S. deliveries because of the federal tax credit, that's 200,000 deliveries threshold. But we reached out to Tesla about it, and they actually said that's not the case. They said the only reason the delivery time is so long is because of a backlog due to high demand for the Model S and X, which is surprising to me. I don't know about you. Yeah,
a little surprising. I don't know if I believe Tesla saying. I think June is like a really good, it's like right at the end of the quarter, and. I have a feeling that we're going to pass 200,000 at that point in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, June is actually still in the second quarter, so that's why I'm. It's toward the end of the quarter for sure, but it's still in the second quarter. So I don't actually see exactly how the federal tax credit things plays into it.
But if they slow down deliveries and they have their 200,000th in June, then that's the quarter that it starts ending. But if they have their 200,000th delivery on July 1st, then it's the third quarter. And that's a whole, like, 90 days of extra $7,500 credits.
Yeah, sure. So it's not like they're going to stop deliveries anyway in the U.S.
No, they're just slowing them down. This is my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, but the other thing too is Model 3, because I think the Model S and X doesn't matter that much for it, because it all depends on the production rate of the Model 3. So if they do reach a 2,500 by the end of next month, and most of them are still going to the U.S., if not all of them, because the next market is Canada, and they said mid 2018. So unless that means like April or something for some reason.
Which it never does. And Tesla, mid means like the exact last day of the mid.
Yes. So unless that changes, all those deliveries going to go to the US, and then they're going to hit that number real fast, because I think they're already over 180,000 according to my estimate. So speaking of that, I wanted to talk about that because Tesla released today their 10K for the year. And it's difficult to tell. Tesla doesn't release the number of deliveries per market or anything like that. In Europe, we have a good idea of it because all the registration numbers for new cars are public, or pretty much. So what we learned this week in that case is that Tesla in Europe is outselling several flagship German premium cars like the BMW 7 Series and the Mercedes S-Class with how many deliveries? 16,000 according to Jato Dynamics, which is a research firm in Europe. So that's a lot of deliveries. But Tesla also released the 10K this week, and the 10K doesn't give us the units delivered, but it gives us the total money that Tesla generated in the specific market. Well, not all markets. The US, China, Norway, and then others. And what we learned is out of the 11.7 billion revenue last year, 6.2 were in the U.S. So Tesla is still, most of his business is still in the U.S. So we can pretty much infer that half of deliveries, or a little more than half, are going to the U.S. China grew doubled last year, which is pretty impressive. Now,
especially with how much they cost in China with all the import tariff.
Yeah, there's a 25% import tariff on Tesla's vehicle in China because they are U.S. made. So that's a big difference. But they had a rough start back in 2014, 2015. Then they fired like half the staff there, and they changed the leadership and everything. And they've really figured out the market. In 2016, they made $1 billion. That was triple what they made in 2015. So they didn't really manage to keep that growth rate, but that's almost impossible going from what they made in 2015. But they still doubled it in 2017 with $2 billion, which made it the second biggest market aside from the US. Then Norway grew crazy as usual because there was the Model X, and there was also the four quarters 2017 in Norway for Tesla was completely insane because of like the fear of the tax credit, not the tax credit that they have, but they have an incentive system, and since Tesla's cars are heavier than most EVs, they might have lose some of that great government incentive in Norway. They didn't end up losing it, but just the fear alone ended up people buying a lot of Teslas in Norway. So making over $800 million in 2017.
There was some bad news, though, or there is some bad news that Tesla is doing poorly in Hong Kong, which is a special administrative region of China, because the word on the street is that BMW, Mercedes, and the other luxury automakers kind of lobbied to get rid of the EV incentive in Hong Kong.
And like China, they had pretty strong EV incentive until 2017, and then what happened is that when they removed that, it didn't just slow down sales of EV, pretty much
died.
Stopped it altogether. Like Tesla, I think, delivered like half a dozen cars since. Pretty insane. Maybe not 2017, maybe like after the first quarter of 2017, something like that. But
there were actually a ton of Teslas there already, because people were buying them pretty briskly. And then, you know, I can imagine, like, if you're, you know, you're looking at a car and it's $100,000, and then the next week it's $120,000, you're like, yeah. I'm not going to get that car. It was just $100,000, you know.
Even if they're rich enough to buy it,
right?
And it's just because it's changed, and they saw the value of the car being the value,
and it could come back at any moment too. So
yeah. Well, there's a lot of lobbying from the local EV association in Hong Kong. It's because it's not like Hong Kong, first of all, makes sense for EV just because of the size of the...
Right.
It's a mega city, it's a huge city, but in terms of size, it makes a lot of sense to have a short range electric vehicles. Well, though Tesla are more longer range, but that's what's interesting too, because Tesla was just dominating the market to an incredible level. Like 80% of the EVs there were Teslas, which is not the case anywhere else, even like in huge markets like Norway for EV.
Well, Hong Kong's a weird market because, you know, it's super packed there. And if you have a car, and most people don't have cars, but if you have a car, you're quite wealthy. Mm-hmm. And so most of the cars on the road are actually really nice cars. It's kind of like Monaco. Super small space. But if you do have a car and you are driving around, you're either a taxi or you're limo, or you're a very nice car. Nobody's got like a Chevy, you know, in Hong Kong. So it is very strange that they pulled the incentive on Teslas. And you know, I have a friend there, and he's on very active on Facebook, and he's, you know, conspiracy. Like it's the German automakers, and they're infiltrating the government and all this stuff.
Well, the German automaker probably did have it's not really you don't need to be
just a lobbyist.
Because there was a lobbying effort, a public one, from the German automakers, but they weren't really asking, as far as we know publicly, they weren't asking to remove the incentive completely. They were asking to refocus it toward plug-in hybrids too. Because Mercedes, like you said, they're all driving nice cars. So what are the nice cars, like a Mercedes and a BMW and an Audi and stuff like that? But those cars are not offered all electric, and the incentive was focused on all electric vehicles. So they were trying to reshape the incentive program to include plug-in hybrids so that they can start selling a few cars. Because Tesla was really eating into the gas-powered car market, which is the goal of the incentive. The incentive is there for people to buy an EV instead of buying a gas-powered car.
Right, and it's quite polluted in Hong Kong. It's super important not to...
Was working.
It was.
It's just that it was
disproportionately favored Tesla because you have the same incentive, but nobody's buying a less than $100,000 EV because nobody buys less than $100,000 cars there. So there's one $100,000 EV, and that's Tesla. So that's what sells.
Yeah, it's not like. If the Bolt was offered in Hong Kong, for example, it's not like it was going to eat Chevy Sonic sales there.
Right.
So that's a problem. So,
although small cars do well there too as well. I know what you're.
Yeah, I'm not saying that to hit on the Bolt or anything. I'm just saying, like, because of the nature of the market there, it didn't make sense.
Right.
But that was an interesting turn of event that happened.
But speaking of China, though, $2 billion, that was quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a twofold increase. It's insanely impressive. And also, Tesla China, as PR, released a few data yesterday about the, like... To highlight the growth there. And they talked about that they reached the milestone of 1,000... superchargers in the country, and like the three biggest superchargers in the world are in China, so they're really a big focus on charging there. Then they also over 2,000 destination charger in China. Then also Tesla, we were talking about last year, introduce the dual connector system that I think we talked about last week.
Like, right.
There's a new connector that matched the Chinese standard. So that enabled local Tesla owners, to access the public charging network in China, which is growing insanely fast. I think they're aiming for like 25,000 stations by the end of the decade. So they're making it that it makes sense to buy a Tesla in China if you can afford it, and especially if you can afford that 25%.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice thing about the having an authoritarian government is when you want to do something, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
And they get it done.
Yeah, they get it done, and they're really into EVs because, you know, if nothing else, like, you know, obviously the pollution, but also China's domestic EV market, the BYD. I think BYD's like by unit number, like third straight year, it's been the biggest EV maker.
Yeah, and a few others too are pretty big there. In terms of foreign automakers, though, Tesla is completely leading the EV adoption in the country. Because they don't want to install to establish local production, so that's part of it. Because all other foreign automakers, what they're doing is that they are doing joint ventures there, and they're establishing local production through joint ventures. Tesla seems to be very reticent to do that.
And I think that's not dumb, because oftentimes when you partner up with a Chinese company, the technology that you use winds up in a similar fashion in some other vehicles. And
so we've seen that already happen without Tesla establishing that.
Right.
There's already a few Tesla Chinese clones.
Right, but I think Tesla has enough IP that, I mean, you know, maybe it makes sense like somewhere down the road, like when, you know, they've already dismantled a Model 3 and everything is known about, you know, maybe a three-year-old car in China makes sense for Tesla with a partner. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they said that they want local production by the end of the decade there, or maybe early in the next decade. But and they already have an agreement to work with Shanghai,
right,
a local factory there. But apparently the local news reports that Tesla is really negotiating to have 100% owned factory, and it's not going well with the government right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
But going back to technology news, I had a scoop today that I published on Electric about the autopilot. So Tesla started beta testing with customers the latest autopilot update. And it's going to be a big one, people. It's going to be a fun one. It's not going to be a feature-rich one, as Elon Musk warned last month when he talked about future coming updates. But it's going to feature a significant improvement on the auto-steer system. The sources that I talked to that used the update, which is not available yet for the larger fleet, said that it was as good as AP1 or better than AP1 on highway driving. So if we come back really to like the whole autopilot 2.0 debacle, over the last year we've seen some improvements on some aspect of the system. So if there's no road markings, anything like that, and the auto steers become available anyway, then autopilot 2 is way better than autopilot 1. But on highways, it changed a lot from an update to another update, and it changed back and forth. And so depending on who you talk to, it's going to be a different opinion. But from all the owners that I talked to, I think the general consensus is that AP1 was generally better still to this day at general highway driving with good lane markings. So now, coming back to that early access release, that's not the case anymore. Like, everyone I talked to is that it's just as good or even better than Autopilot 1 at highway driving. And since it was already better at other situation, we could probably assert that AP2 now is better than AP1.
So if it gets released in the next few weeks, then Elon Musk is exactly a year and a month late on his prediction that AP2 would surpass AP1 in January of 2017.
Yeah, no matter how you look at it, he's extremely late on that. That's for sure. He admitted it a few months ago, like it was way more complicated than he thought it would be. We should mention that there's still one feature that was added to AP2 that wasn't in AP2 before, aside from just improvement of auto steer and tack, is you'll now be able to see vehicles on lanes that are adjacent to the lanes that you're in. So it's not just the main lane right now, the lane that you're in, that you can see vehicle, but not you can see, that the autopilot can see and renders it on the instrument cluster. So when you look at your instrument cluster, you can see the other lines inside of you, but you don't see cars in it. Now there's going to be cars in it. And and that's that update. So that we're talking about the front end of it right now, so what the user is going to experience. But that's enabled by the significantly improved backend. So there's a much heavier backend to the system right now. The neural network has been improved a lot. It's now a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and it's powering a much more complex computer vision system that Tesla has developed. So things are looking good, at least. We're seeing some improvements. So I know there's a lot of frustration from Tesla owners with the Autopilot 2.0 because of the delays that we just mentioned. And for a while now, like every update that was coming up, like there's something better in the update than something worse, and it never seemed like Tesla really nailed the there were a few updates that were generally, the general consensus were that it was an improvement, but then another update would change things and everything. But I, from what I hear right now, this one is going to be probably going to be approved by everyone, I think. It's that's my opinion based on the few people I talked to that had access to the update.
Yeah, that would be nice to... I mean, you know, I have to say, like, when I first used Auto, I'm on the 2.0 hardware. When I first used it, I was like, "What? This is not garbage, but it was like, not confidence inspiring." But now that I've gotten to a point where I know when it's good and I know when it can kind of take over, it changes the game, and especially in long term driving, it doesn't, like, you should never take your eyes off the road, but sometimes you do have to take your eyes off the road to like reach down and find something. Now that's super easy. You have confidence. You can, find your food or whatever you're doing in the car. And you can look down and you kind of know that when you look back up, you're still going to be in the lane. So I'm really looking forward to like the next version of this.
Yeah. In terms of timing, we don't know exactly, because generally it's the last step when it's going to early access for a significant update like that. But then they could be feedback from the early access, so they could try to implement the feedback. And so the main thing is that they're trying to make it very safe. But if it's going to early access, it means that like it went through internal testing quite thoroughly and they think it's safe. Now they just want maybe like some final feedback on it before pushing it to the wider fleet. So it could be anything from a week to like a month or something like that. If there's unless they find like a big issue in the early access, and then it could take even longer than that. But Joel Sapp just made a very good comment here, saying that they wanted to work on Autopilot 2 while Autopilot 1 was still installed, but there was a problem with Mobileye. The partnership with Mobileye fell apart at that point. So yeah, I think that's an important point, because it makes a lot of sense. It makes the delays make a lot more sense if you think about Tesla not introducing, introducing the AP2 hardware, but still working with Mobileye technology for the current autopilot feature. So keeping the auto steer, keeping the traffic aware cruise control with Mobileye's computer vision technology. While Tesla work on the Autopilot 2 with the hardware on the bike and on the cars, and what they call like a shadow mode, so the features are there, but they're not active in the car. So that would have made a lot of sense. But then when Mobileye found that out, they said we don't want that, because like it's direct competition with us. So they pulled they didn't want to include their chips in the Autopilot 2 hardware suit.
Yeah, there's no way to put it other than the breakup was a bad one.
Yeah, it was. You can't exactly blame Mobileye. There were nothing to win for them. Like, they saw Tesla is not a partner anymore. They're becoming a competitor, so we don't want that. It makes sense for them. But I don't know. So probably Tesla really didn't manage that quite well, because when that happened, Elon Musk just fell back on his plan B, and his plan B was just make Autopilot work, Autopilot 2.0 work now. Or actually, like 2 months. So it was introduced in October 2016, and he said like by December, January, it's gonna work out. And of course, as we know now, it didn't work out. So
there was also some employee turnover at that point, which may have slowed things down as well.
Yeah, the leadership changed a lot at the Autopilot team over throughout 2016 mm-hmm. and 2017, especially. But yeah, pretty exciting stuff on the Autopilot front that's coming soon. We are pretty excited. Tesla Semi news. Tesla Semi came back in the news this week because Daimler unveiled their own truck, electric truck this week. It was the version of the Actros. Actros.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a diesel-powered truck, but they made an electric version. And delivered the 10 of them to a few customers in Europe to do some testing. And during that event to release them, they said that they commented on the Tesla Semi truck, because the truck that they unveiled is nothing like the Tesla Semi. So first of all, I don't think it's a Class 8, so it's not as big as a truck with as big of a capacity, and the range is only 100 miles.
Yeah, it's not
125 miles, so 200 kilometers, about 200 kilometers, 125 miles, which is nothing compared to Tesla's 500 miles promise with a full load, a full capacity of 80,000 pounds. So then what happened is that the head of trucks at Daimler commented on the Tesla Semi and said, I'm quoting right now, "If Tesla really delivers on this promise, we'll obviously buy two trucks, one to take apart and one to test, because if that happens, something has passed us by. But for now, the same laws of physics apply in Germany and California." So it's like a tongue-in-cheek, unquote, it's like a tongue-in-cheek comment saying that Tesla's, the numbers that Tesla released about the truck defies the laws of physics, and it's not going to work. So they don't think it's going to work. Because that truck that they unveiled this week, They delivered a few prototypes to customers, and they said that the volume production is coming in 2021. So in comparison, Tesla have their truck making 500 miles with a full capacity, a Class 8 truck, so 80,000 pounds, with prototypes right now, and they plan production next year, 2 years earlier than that truck that's not useful aside from urban route.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny that they said that they're going to buy one and take it apart, because you know they're going to buy one and take it apart anyway, regardless of it. I mean, yeah, that's
for sure.
That's what they do. Like,
that's what they did with the Model X just a few months back.
Right.
Remember the Model X that they rented,
right?
Yeah, they rented it. That was awful. Oh, God.
They rented it, took it apart, put it back together, kind of not so great. And
took the example from BMW with the Model 3, at least. They paid $200,000 for that Model 3. You guys are too cheap. The Daimler just rents it for a few $100 or maybe a few thousand, was a few weeks, and then just dismantle it. Well, allegedly dismantle it. They test track tested it, which is already not like a cool thing to do if you're renting a car, but they allegedly dismantle it and put it back together and not correctly too, so that would be just awful. But anyway, coming back to the Tesla Semi, so yeah, they have to say that, because like, if they don't say that they think Tesla is bullshitting us, then they are saying that the truck that they are releasing right now is just worthless.
It's garbage. It's
not, yeah. So of course they have to say that. Now, with this said, it does have a point in terms of Tesla has to prove the range yet. Like, they haven't exactly proved the range yet.
And we've already commented on this. Like, we've already said that with technology that we know today, that's, you know, in production, it would be hard for them to build something like this. But you know, this is a couple of years down the road. They've got some new technology they're working on. As you make packs huge, battery packs huge, then, you know, it becomes easier to get the watts per dollar and the size down per watt, watt hour.
I think the biggest concern right now in terms of Tesla Semi for us, like, we know that Tesla can make a huge energy capacity battery pack. They always have the highest energy capacity battery pack on the market. Then they're doing battery systems stationary one, power packs. It's stationary. It's not a vehicle pack, but they still like they are very familiar with high energy capacity products. But in terms of price, that truck starts at $150,000. Well, that's the 300. So let's look at the 180,000, like the full 500 miles truck. $180,000. Even if they reach $100 per kilowatt hour at the pack level, that's a $100,000 pack. If it's a 1 megawatt hour battery pack, which it sounds like it needs to be for the 500 miles capacity. That's $100,000 in a $180,000 truck. So they have to build that truck with $80,000 for everything else.
Yeah, and the stationary battery packs are not the most expensive high density batteries. They're kind of like the mediocre batteries.
Yeah, too. But even then, it's pretty tight. And the weight too. So we had a few people sending us like, oh, it's already been debunked. Tesla can make the battery pack and make the truck work with I think engineering.com has an article about it that we shared a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's a good article.
It's a good article too. It makes sense and everything, but it still doesn't answer the question. Like, it says that you can make a battery pack of that size with maybe 10,000 pounds, which is great, but then Tesla has to make everything else on the truck half the weight of a regular tractor, diesel tractor. So it's not impossible again, but it's like if Tesla is right and pulled everything off, which is a real possibility, it's really an engineering marvel, and everyone involved should get a real big bonus, because and not just a bonus, but they need to be recognized as having completely revolutionized the truck industry altogether if all that's true. And Jérôme Guillen needs to get like a $100 million stock package from Tesla. I'm saying it right now. If you pull it, Jérôme, tell Elon that Fred says you can get $100 million package, stock package for pulling it off.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Because it is. A few weeks back, what Elon said, like he said they're planning to make 100,000 of those a year. So that it would be like the biggest truck program, equal to like Daimler's Freightliner. So that comes back to Daimler. So that we started talking about that because of Daimler's eActros, and they have the most to lose when it comes to this, because they are the biggest truck maker in the world. They have like five different brands, the biggest of which is in the Class 8 category. It's the Freightliner. And Tesla is going directly after that truck, after the Freightliner, after the Cascadia and those kind of trucks. And it's a big business for Daimler. And of course, if all the specs that Tesla said are right, and generally Tesla delivers on specs, like they don't always deliver on timing, on the timing, on the production scales and everything like that, but they do most of the time deliver on specs. So maybe they're right, and maybe they just changed the whole industry and just a quick event back in November last year.
Yeah, and Joel Sapp and Cedric Weinstein in the chat room make a good point that gas, you know, fuel is way more expensive in Europe. So there's that much more to gain. Yeah, it's going to be a big deal there. You know, here in the U.S., it'll certainly be a big deal because diesel is not cheap by any means, but I think they say 60% taxed in Europe, which is, I think we're like 5 or 10% here.
Yeah, it makes sense too. Like you should tax that, especially if there are alternatives. Because of course,
certainly,
because transportation affects the cost of everything else. Every product that we buy is affected by the cost of transportation. So if you can make a big difference on it, make a big difference on the overall cost of products everywhere. And that's a 20% difference a year, like a 20% difference in cost after accounting for the amortization of the sticker price of the Tesla Semi. It's a huge difference in terms of overall cost here. DHL came out today, head of logistics for DHL trucks transportation, said that they actually see the, and then those guys are ordered 10 Tesla Semi last year, and they see a payback time of 1.5 year, year and a half on the Tesla Semi.
It's a no-brainer.
Tesla themselves says 2 years, so they ran their own numbers based on their own maintenance costs on their current trucks, and they have like a huge fleet, so pretty good data.
Yeah,
and,
it's crazy. I mean, it's watching this like slow motion disruption of this whole like transportation industry, and like these other players just like saying, nah, they're not going to be able to, the math is
right
there.
Right after the unveiling of the truck, I spoke to an executive at that is working on an electric truck but powered by hydrogen, and.
I bet I can guess who it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can guess who it is. And they are good guys and everything, and they love Tesla too. I think they even drive Tesla vehicles and everything. But that was what came out of that presentation for them, is that, nah, that's not true. They can't do that. The numbers don't work. You can't be that aerodynamic. You can't stock that many batteries in a truck. Like, if you look at our trucks, like, even... I think the biggest one I've seen yet is like BYD and maybe Proterra too, as like a 600 kilowatt hour pack in one of their buses.
Yeah, the buses.
So it's huge. It's six Model S 100D pack. It's massive. Tesla is talking about adding four more to that, four more Model S pack on top of that. So yeah, it's hard to understand for a lot of people. But I think it's happening, guys. I think it is. We've seen a few prototype sightings over the last few weeks. There was one this week. You can check on Electric if you.
Yeah, it's weird that they're just driving around neighborhoods instead of
at least it shows it's real. They have the truck. They're there, and you see it like do a launch from low speed, and that thing just takes off like it's a race car, and it's a huge truck. And everyone that's ever watched a Class 8 trucks accelerate knows that it's not nothing special to see. It's basically crawling for a minute, but Tesla Semi just picks up. That's no surprise to everyone. Of course, we know that like, there's four electric motors, and electric motors have just so much torque. That's the acceleration from a standstill or for low speed is impressive, no matter what. But
so speaking of high speed, we're getting toward the end. We should definitely talk about this Teslanda. Can you
Teslanda?
Teslanda.
yeah, that's from our friend
Jason.
Jimmy Bolt. Jim. Forget his last name, but his YouTube. His username is Jimmy Bolt. And he converted a Tesla Accord, like I think an 85 or something like that.
Yeah, Honda Accord. Like, can you imagine a less sexy car to convert into?
I don't get that, man. I don't get why people do that. If you're gonna spend that much time converting a car to electric, do like a 65 Corvette or something. Like, right. Don't do an 85 Honda Accord. But anyway, he did it, and it looks weird. It is crazy fast, and why we are talking about it, because he used a Tesla drive unit in it, and he used a Tesla drive unit from our friend Jason Huge, who started a new startup. So we know Jason as WK 057. He's known as a Tesla hacker for hacking Tesla software and having root access and doing some project with it. Especially known, I think, like his biggest accomplishment was in my opinion, retrofitting a Tesla, a pre-autopilot Tesla to the autopilot with an autopilot hardware suit. So Elon Musk famously said that it's almost impossible. Like it will be like a $35,000 job and take too many work hours. And Jason just said, I can do it. And he did it and it works. And it actually works better than Autopilot 1.
And he gets updates too.
Yeah, well, he doesn't get updates anymore.
He has to get the updates himself. Of
Autopilot on it.
Right.
He copied Tesla's Autopilot hardware. So hardware suits them, the same hardware, but even with the sonars around the car and, of course, the Autopilot camera, which is on the Mobileye chip and everything. But then he changed the software to make it even better, and apparently it is better, according to him.
He's doing such cool stuff. He's taking a Volt power pack, and because Volt power packs actually put out Chevy Volt more power than a Tesla power pack or battery pack.
They have higher discharge rate.
Which to me is like kind of blows my mind. He's using those. He seems like somebody to watch. Like, you know, it kind of feels like he's going to have a aftermarket car company or something.
Yeah, well, we didn't actually set it. We didn't get there yet. But yeah, that's the thing. He started a company, an aftermarket company, because the guy has been just buying salvage Teslas on left and right. And I think at one point he had like over 40 titled Tesla vehicles, over 30 at least, maybe over 40 different salvage Tesla titles. So he just has a huge inventory of parts, of Tesla parts, and he refurbished them. And now he started a company to sell them, which is called HSR Motors. And this is not a paid advertisement and everything. We love what Jason does. And he's not directly affiliated with that guy, with Jamie built, and his Teslanda on the Accord. But he bought the battery pack, Tesla drive unit, which is a rear-wheel drive performance drive unit from Tesla, refurbished by Jason. And I think he bought also the controller. So what Jason does with his company, which is SSR Motors, he also built a custom controller to control that battery pack. Since you don't have all the Tesla software and everything, he has built something to just replace that and be able to control it. So you have a lot less work to do in order to do it. And he also sells a bunch of other things from Tesla. Since he has a huge inventory of parts, you can even buy like an instrument cluster. So if you want to do an electric conversion, you could technically buy the motor, the battery pack, and even a Tesla instrument cluster with custom software from Jason to just run like a whole powertrain and control software from your car and just install that into whatever frame and body and car body that you want. I want to see a Corvette, like 60s, 70s Corvette with a Tesla powertrain in it, an instrument cluster.
Yeah, that would be
and
cool.
If someone can fit the 17-inch screen, then do it. I don't think that's possible, but if you can do it, someone does that, I'll pay good money for it.
Okay. Yeah, give them your roadster for it.
Yeah, pretty. That's pretty much a roadster, yeah. Yeah, you can check the video on Electrek if you search Teslanda.
It's absurd. Like,
and it's also on the description of our YouTube video, if you're listening on the podcast, yeah, on YouTube. It's there, and it's quick. So it's a 10-second video, but it reached over 60. And he says that he can do it in 2.7, so it's not really as fast as it's faster than a rear-wheel drive Tesla. So he's using a rear-wheel drive motor, not dual motor. So
much smaller car.
Yeah, it's a much smaller car, not as heavy too, since he's using just a Volt battery pack instead of a full 85 or more.
You know what that reminds me of? Actually, you remember that white zombie?
Yeah,
that old what is that, Datsun or something?
Was it BMW was the Rimac guy, the white zombie? Yeah, that might be a Datsun.
Yeah, that it kind of reminds me of that. Like just taking the most, like, you know, obviously this guy did some weird stuff with the wheels, and
jacked it up.
You know, the white zombie car could just, you know, just be driving up to you next to you on the road, and you'd be like, oh, what's that piece of garbage? And it would destroy you off the line.
Yeah,
and I wonder if that's part of the, you know, just get the ugliest car you possibly can and make it the baddest thing on the road.
Yeah. Well, Matt Rimac has BMW too. Like, if you remember, Rimac started before the Concept One. He built a custom BMW, like a very old one, looks just like that. Mm-hmm. And I built a crazy powertrain for it, and it was a very similar situation. So you can check out HSR's website, and he has all these his product listed there, from battery modules to drive units and everything in between. It's not cheap. Don't be surprised. It's there's a markup on it, but it's market. Either Tesla doesn't sell them themselves, so he's pretty much cornered the market on them. So, but if you're looking to convert a car, it's pretty much if you're looking to convert a car, you don't want to do it the cheap way, but you want to do it the powerful way. Go HSR Motors.
If I wonder if he would do it.
It's pretty much.
I wonder if he'd do like a motorboat.
Yeah. That's the thing too. So, Jason's also known for his own energy storage system at his house in Carolina. Hmm. And I think he used like 3 Tesla battery pack for it, so something like that. So you can also buy the battery modules from Tesla from HSR Tesla battery modules to do something similar. It's pretty insane. But anyway, that's pretty much it for the show this week, guys. So thanks a lot for listening, and thanks a lot to our Patreons. Patreon.com/Electrek for contributing to our campaign, which is supporting both the podcast and our website and our blogs and everything we do regarding electric vehicles, Tesla, and renewable energy. We have over 200 Patreons right now, and we appreciate each and every one of you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot for listening, too. Have a good one.
Take it easy.